Hello and welcome to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports and the world of esports as a whole. I am your host, Norris Howard, and we are going to bring to you the only resource right now, and I mean this, the only resource to bring to you all the things happening in the college world of esports. This is the number one place to do it. I have Daniel, I have Jacob. They're here at the UNLV studios, and we are going to bring to you the hottest information. So, let's get to it. The final North American entry into the World's Championship for League of Legends has been selected. That's Clutch Gaming, everybody. Clutch Gaming went up against TSM in the Gauntlet tournament, and they were able to pull off the reverse sweep. Absolutely amazing. And what happened, unfortunately, is TSM allowed Demonte to have that Qiyana pick. That should have never happened. Once he got on Qiyana, the reverse sweep was on. They were able to go on and win three straight and secure that slot into the World Championship. Now, TSM, unfortunately, this is their second straight year not being able to go to the World's Tournament. This is a legacy brand that, again, will not be on the biggest stage for League of Legends. It's absolutely disappointing and baffling that they allowed such a major turnaround in that tournament. And it continues to blow my mind, personally, to see TSM not be at Worlds. But congratulations to Clutch Gaming and everything they were able to do at that tournament. Now, in CSGO, we have Astralis, one of the greatest teams in the history of CSGO. They were able to find their form once more at Star Ladder Berlin, and they are the champions. They were able to beat out Avangard and take home that championship. Now, you may be wondering, what happened to Team Liquid? Where's Team Liquid, the best team in 2019? They weren't even a part of this conversation. Now, again, Avangard was able to play them pretty decently, but unfortunately, Astralis continued to show why they are the dominant brand in CSGO. And again, we don't know where Team Liquid is going to refine their form, but they're going to have to go through Astralis for the remainder of 2019 to prove that they are the best team. And lastly, we've got a gang of stuff going on in Overwatch. Playoffs are underway, and the first round is now complete. And let me tell you, there is all kind of upsets happening all over the place. Right now, in the winner's finals, we've got the New York Excelsior going up against the Vancouver Titans. Those are two very big names in the world of the Overwatch League. But we have the defending champions, the London Spitfire. They've already been eliminated. They're not a part of this conversation at all. They were taken out by none other than the San Francisco Shock, who were sent to the loser's bracket by the Atlanta Reign in a magnificent upset. So, I'm going to bring the guys in on this one. Big Overwatch fans. Guys, how are you feeling about that upset between Atlanta and the San Francisco Shock? How did this happen?
As a Bay Boy, I was just nothing but pride. Like, yeah, that's right. You know, you guys like to, you know, count us out. Look what happened. We did it. You know, we may have got sent to losers, but no one's going to forget the name of San Francisco. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. But San Francisco is such a strong team right now. You have the MVP in Sinatra. He's performed very well all throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you guys went up against Atlanta, a team that plays somewhat unorthodox, they had no answer for it. Mm-hmm. So, now that they've moved forward, they've gotten through the London Spitfire, they're continuing to move on throughout the tournament. Are they still a top three team? Are they still a favorite in this league?
I don't know. Yeah. I think they are.
I'm pretty sure they are.
Because you don't beat the champs without everyone saying, okay, well, let's keep an eye on them, you know? I think that's why they're going to surprise you. I think the San Francisco is going to surprise you. They're going to get out of the bracket, and you're just not the last you've seen of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I think the top three overall is Titans, San Francisco, and Atlanta. Because New York, I mean, they might finally not choke, and that'd be great. But the further in you get, the choke meter just gets higher and higher.
That's true.
Right? And I'm a Spitfire fan, so this whole week has just been hard for me.
It's been so frustrating. I'm sorry, man.
Like, being a fan of the worst best team is abysmal. Because they've been struggling for like 2 months now. Like,
They really have.
After the Shanghai game, I knew they were not going to get further.
Yeah.
Because you're in a meta where you can't play Bird Ring. one of your main roster characters. So if you can't play Birdring, you're not really winning the game. It's like if you can't play Prophet or Gesture. Like, you're not going
to
win.
And I actually really agree with that. But I also want to bring a highlight to some of the support players that we've been seeing. We've been seeing a lot of great play from somebody like Dogman. We've been seeing a lot of great play from Jonak out of nowhere, surprisingly, because he's able to play a few more characters that he hasn't been able to play previously. You know, saying that and understanding that New York has not performed in the way previously that everybody has expected, they're in the winner's final now. They're going up against what people would say probably is the best team in the league in Vancouver. I want to ask you, Jacob, what is your prediction for that winner's final? Do you still see Vancouver coming out on top?
I definitely see Vancouver beating NYXL.
Does he never count against the New York choke?
I mean, the choke is probably the biggest factor, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the Titans again and again have just proved they're just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, they are still weaker than what they once were with the meta. I think the same for New York. And that's where Atlanta has been able to prove themselves, is this meta's helped them while it's hurt the Titans and NYXL.
Yeah. So and one last thing that I definitely want to touch on is that this is a double elimination bracket. And for all those who don't quite understand what a double elimination bracket consists of, essentially, you have to lose twice, right? So you have to lose in your normal bracket. You get sent down to loser's bracket, and then you have to play again. And if you lose that, you're out of the tournament. Do you guys feel like this is a better format for the Overwatch League moving forward, or is it too much Overwatch, you think?
I don't think it's too much. As a fighting game like fan, I'm very used to the whole double elimination bracket. To me, it shows, it gives the other, like, the people and losers a chance to show, like, yeah, I may have been sent to losers, but I know I can beat this team. Mm-hmm. We know we can beat them, and we'll beat them twice in grand finals to prove that. And I love nothing better than a good bracket and a good grand finals reset.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think there's a reset in Overwatch League, because I think they're just having one day. So we won't have that big moment of a bracket reset in the comeback. I agree with you. As a fighting game fan, I love the concept of a bracket reset. I don't think we're going to have that here. But I agree. I think that the double elimination format works well for any esports, especially considering that sometimes it's just a fluke. Meta's weird. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a meta where, you know, a team may not be as familiar or as strong in that meta, and maybe they need a few extra games to scrim. I think that's very, very advantageous for any team moving forward. But if you guys had to pick a team that's gonna win it all moving forward, what is the team that you pick to win the Overwatch League championship?
I still think it's going to either be Titans or San Francisco, because now with double elimination, San Francisco is now in a revenge game standpoint. And teams that are always in a revenge game stance always can do a little bit better. And then we still got Hangzhou, which I don't know if they'll be able to beat Atlanta, but it's possible, right? Because a lot of these games went to a Game 7. So there's a real chance for upsets to happen again.
Yeah, and
San Fran could beat Atlanta in the round two.
And that's true. And when I personally got to go out to the media day that they had at the start of the season, and every single solitary team I talked to said that Hangzhou was the team to look out for. That they had the talent. You got to love the pink finger gun. It's such great branding. They're such a great team.
Yeah, how can you actually hate the cotton candy team?
You can't hate the cotton candy team.
All of my tanks wear Hangzhou skins.
It's great.
And it's pure joy.
It's great.
Every time.
But they're a tough team to hate, so I agree. I think they're a team to watch out for, but, you know, I think they're going to definitely make some noise. They may get through Atlanta, but that remains to be seen.
The Gladiators have also been proving themselves.
Very true.
So, because I was also a hater on them. I was like, oh, you know, they're good, but whatever.
They got balance.
And they're consistently just staying up there.
They got balance.
They got Daddy Big Goose.
San Francisco, Vancouver in the finals.
Oof. All right. That's the game everybody wants.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's the game everybody wants. If it's San Francisco, Vancouver,
San think? Francisco and take it all.
Yeah, because San Francisco does consistently beat the Titans.
Well, so. I disagree. I'm going to go with the Vancouver Titans.
Here it goes.
Because I think they're absolutely the best team. Point blank, period. Runaway fighting. That's what I got to say. But we want to hear from you guys. We want to know, who do you guys pick out there for the Overwatch League champion? Let us know. Hit us up on social media, Checkpoint XP on Twitter, on Instagram, Checkpoint_XP there. So let us know. And also slide over to CheckpointXP.com for all of your Checkpoint XP on campus needs. We're going to be right back, and these guys are going to get all into what's happening in the college scene of esports. We have more. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for the collegiate scene in esports. And don't forget, if you guys are a part of a esports program on your campus and you want to be a part of the show, don't forget to head over to checkpointxp.com and submit clips, talk about your teams, let us know what's happening on your campus as it pertains to esports. We want everybody involved. And if you're on point, you got some dope ganks in the mid lane, you got easy GGs, let us know, because we want to let you, we want to promote you guys. Now, we also have two awesome people here in the UNLV studios, and they're going to let us know what's going on in the Overwatch Collegiate Series.
Where's the awesome people?
Stop it.
The production team is awesome.
Yeah, they are awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll open up with the Overwatch Collegiate scene.
Sure.
So I'm glad that we've all talked about this in the past a couple times, because I don't have to, like, put my head in the wall anymore. And, like, do you guys also get it now?
Yeah. So I think I got the idea, but why don't you explain
it
to me one
more
time?
Yeah, it's good to dive in. So right now, for the fall, there's two Overwatch Collegiate things happening. You got your varsity, mm-hmm. your varsity league, and you have the Overwatch Collegiate preseason.
Yes.
So what the varsity is that either TESPA has invited schools or schools have applied.
Okay.
So if they accepted the application, they're in. Or if they were invited through TESPA, they're in. And then the preseason is everyone else. Mm-hmm. Now, in the past, varsity teams would also have to play in the Overwatch season. But I asked someone on, like, a Discord, like, hey, is that still happening? And they're like, we're not rolling out details for the main season yet. So as of right now, we're just going to act like varsity is its own thing. That might change, but maybe not. So last time, there were 61 teams. So we could probably expect, I'd say, probably between 60 and 100. Probably would be the ballpark.
And how many that is invited and how many that is, like, applied?
Yeah, that's also a thing. They didn't really talk about that, but for their invitational, the large majority is invited schools.
Right. Okay.
Because the people that accepted an application, they do a qualifier to get in. So the general structure is that qualifiers are going to be on September 21st, and the second qualifier will be on September 27th, 28th. So the invitational is, I believe it's a tiered round robin.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the invitational teams are already in there, and then they're going to have the qualifier. After the qualifier, teams that didn't qualify go into what they call the main season, and then at the same time, that's when the actual invitational happens.
Got it. Ah, okay.
And that's happening at the same exact time, which is October 5th through the 26th. And they're saying that the top eight teams of the invitational go to playoffs, and the top two from main season.
Got it.
So, like, the cream of the crop they're aiming for is the invitational. Like, those are, like, the legit schools.
Yeah.
And then the main season is like, these are the other varsity schools.
But those are the schools you don't want to count out.
Yeah,
those are the ones who want it the most.
They're really fighting for it. Yeah.
Exactly. So I have a question. Now we have this system set up as it pertains to the Overwatch Varsity Series, and we have the Invitational and all this stuff. So when you have a school that maybe hasn't gotten taken to the Invitational or whatever, you know, what do you think some of those schools need to focus on in order to be a really strong program?
So on the TESPA website, they're like, you know, you need to have a staff, you need to have a facility, like all these check marks for them to be like a sanctioned esports backed by the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, even if you're not, you can still apply. And if you meet some of the boxes, you might get in.
Mm.
So I think it's a lot of staff and facility based stuff for them to be considered legit enough.
Okay. Because we know that Overwatch is one of the most, you know, regimented and
one of
the strongest foundations and backbones.
It is a very strong structure.
It is. And they want structure even all the way at the collegiate scene. So for me, it sounded like even if you're a club, as opposed to, you know, being run through your athletics department or something, even if you're a club, you have a chance, especially if you have static locations in your staff.
Yeah. And I think being backed by the school might be like another big one, potentially. But I think for watching collegiate esports, this is a good place to start, because esports is already at its peak viewage right now. So if you already know how Overwatch works, watching the collegiate stuff wouldn't be that hard to follow either.
Right.
So I think that if you're trying to get into collegiate esports for the first time, this is a good place to start.
Who would you say are some favorites right now?
Well, we got UC Irvine, obviously.
Yeah,
UC
I think most of UC schools,
yeah,
they usually just perform so well.
And
then
unfair.
Utah was, they were in the finals last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of the playoff teams are repeating. And speaking of playoffs, that'll be happening on November 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 10th. So the tournament's not that long, really. It's about to start.
Yeah.
And it's going to be
playoffs
in November.
That's pretty sure. I think another very, very important team to look out for is going to be Boston University. Mm-hmm. They've been performing very well. But we want to hear from you.
Please.
We want to know if you're in the collegiate scene for Overwatch. We want to hear all of your comments, all of your feedback, and we want more of your clips. Send them to us. We're going to have more from the UNLV studios. More coming up. Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. We are here at the UNLV studios talking about what's been going on across the country as it pertains to esports on campus. Colleges all across the country. Now, we got some big news coming out of Ohio State.
Huge.
That's a Big Ten school, everybody.
Exciting.
The big Ohio Ten State.
I can't do that. I'm from Michigan. I can't do it. I can't do it. They tried to trademark the, and I will forever, never, ever forgive them for that. But they still got big news. Daniel, what's going on?
The Ohio State has just opened up an esports arena at their facility. It's going to have about 80 screens for different games. And not only that, they're going to be having a room for broadcasting, for streaming. So even if you're not a player, you can learn this system of like being able to broadcast, being able to produce. This is huge for the world of collegiate esports.
No, I agree.
This is a Big Ten school. This is a known school. And they are embracing the future of esports. This is unprecedented.
No.
What's kind of cool about it, because when I was looking at some of the articles and announcements for it, they also have a VR setup there, which for an esports arena is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Because there is VR esports starting up, but even the thought of that alone.
Yeah, it's a bit strange.
Because we've seen like Overwatch League players, like how they play.
Yeah.
So a guy's probably like snapping his neck, trying to do all this fancy esports stuff.
I don't know if that's a good idea. That just seems like injuries.
But could you imagine watching
it's gonna
VR
be amazing.
Esports on stage?
It seems
that would be electric.
Inducing.
It would be incredible. Like.
But I think this is absolutely amazing, Daniel. As you said, a Big Ten school, Ohio State's one of the most well-known brands in the entire country as it pertains to just collegiate sports in general. And for them to buy into esports as a concept, I think is very, very amazing.
What's neat about this is that Jacob mentioned this earlier during the Overwatch collegiate playoffs. Schools that have a backing of the organizations that have a backing of the school are more likely to get invited. And this shows that schools are backing this. Everyone is trying to get into esports is probably is the new gold rush to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are looking at everyone wants to get into it now at every facet of life. So now we're getting professional and we're getting the collegiate side. And this just shows that, if you put enough time, you put enough money into this stuff, people will come in. Because I have no doubt this is going to raise recruitment for the Ohio State.
No, yeah. I agree with that. And I think another big factor here is not just being a facility for people to go and play, is also the caster suites and the broadcast suites that they have.
People who want to learn how to do that can learn how to do that.
Exactly. Awesome. Because, how many, broadcast journalism programs and sports journalism programs also include broadcasts in mm-hmm. their curriculum? So, you can't have a esports program, in my opinion, and not think about that facet of it as well. So I think that's incredibly powerful.
I wish I had that. It's funny because UNLV, 8-Bit, our esports group, they are now officially backed by UNLV Athletics. They are now an athletic group in UNLV, and that is so cool as us students here to see that happening. So we expect great things from them also, and we hope to have a facility like that.
That'd be great. But even Ohio State recognizing their esports officially, mm-hmm. that's a more recent development too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I believe that was 2017, 2018.
It was.
Yep. Yeah, so already so quickly, it's like, oh, we recognize you, and now you have an arena.
No,
like,
it's amazing how fast
they're doing
the turnaround
really
that is pretty crazy, right? And also, I like the fact that they're taking a very holistic approach, because what we've seen previously in the United States across college campuses is that the focus is very much so on generating players, generating a winning program, mm-hmm. and what we've saw in Europe is they're doing a lot more when it comes to the business of esports, brand development, mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. By having the caster suites, I think, again, it's a better, more holistic approach where we can think about the entire ecosystem of esports more than just providing players. I think it's good.
People are going to realize now that esports is more than just the players itself. There is so much behind esports that people don't recognize. The casters, the producers, that sponsorship is a big deal in esports. So people are going to get exposed to that, and that's really exciting.
No, it is. But We want to hear from everybody out there.
You want to hear?
If you're in Ohio, let us know.
Please.
Has this generated more interest for you? Maybe, you know, wanting to attend Ohio State University. I'm not saying the Ohio State University. I can't do it. I'm from Michigan.
The Ohio State.
I can't do it.
The
but
Ohio State.
We want to hear from you guys. It's going to be awesome. We got more from UNLV, Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus. I am your host, Norris Howard. We are here giving you the finest coverage of esports at the college level. And we have a special guest in our studio. Well, not in the studio, but on the call right now. Hillary Fan of UCI Esports. We want to welcome you in. Hillary, how are you today?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Hillary.
Doing pretty well. Very early.
It is, but we thank you for joining us today. So first and foremost, explain to us what your role is at UCI Esports.
So my official title is Player Support Coordinator, which I usually translate as General Manager for most people. I take care of a lot of the back-end logistics, so gear and travel, but I also do a lot of cool things like I help the students with academic counseling, so career plans, what classes to take, if they need tutoring, I find them resources, things like that. I run some of our academic programs. We're trying to start things like study hall, copying things from traditional athletic teams for sure. And then I do a lot of personal and professional development, so making sure that they have a plan after graduation, working on their resume and interview skills, anything else like maybe they need help with time management. And I also do a lot of that stuff for the intern program. We now have like 11 interns, so need some proper management, making sure someone is following up on all their projects, things like that, and also helping them with personal and professional development.
That sounds so amazing. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is kind of stuff they do for traditional athletics, right?
Mm-hmm. They obviously, because of the NCAA, there's a lot of things like GPA requirements. So I do a little bit of that as well. The different game developers have their own rules. So I'll do a lot of checking on that end. And I have been talking to traditional athletics, especially on the UCI campus, for ideas on like what they do to support their students and what we can emulate, which makes sense for esports.
Now, UCI is one of the top programs when it comes to esports that a lot of programs across the country are looking to emulate. What do you think makes you guys' program so enviable to other programs?
I think we got kind of lucky. When the program had first started, it was born from our big, thriving gaming community that had already existed. So we definitely had a lot of the student support. We had the data to show the people on campus that this was a really legitimate thing, that people really cared about it. So that sort of helped get the program started. So we were pretty successful from the beginning. And we are, you know, in a really nice location, really close to Blizzard and Riot, could really form those relationships and really lean off of each other. And then I think also very special is that we're very focused on our values, right? I think a lot of schools right now may not have the resources, may not be thinking about things yet, and aren't prioritizing what we do. We, you know, really care about making sure that the world's a better place, influencing the industry in a really positive way, and providing whatever support we can for our students, not just in the game, but in all these other areas as well.
So I'm really interested in you saying how the program sort of had its genesis really coming out of a gaming community that you guys already had. Explain a little bit about that process and how it was able to grow, because I think a lot of campuses across the country would be really interested in how they can begin to start a more substantial, you know, esports apparatus in their schools.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a bit before my time, but our current assistant director, Kathy Chong, co-founded what's called TAG, the Association of Gamers. It's the student-run umbrella organization for a lot of gaming divisions on the UCI campus. So it includes like the Blizzard division, the League of Legends division. It was this huge, thriving community. They had a lot of really great events. I believe Kathy helped really organize this big event for a world's viewing party, and there was like 800 students there or something, and it was way beyond their expectations. So really, there was just already all these students really engaged, being really active, doing a lot of really cool things, and it was really easy to take this data to make all these presentations and make the case for esports on campus.
Hillary, so obviously this is a really new territory. Why do you think it's important for esports players, especially in the collegiate scene, to have this support like this, to have a coordinator, to have a general manager?
Oh my God, it's so important. I mean, if you think about it, they're, you know, student athletes. So they have to balance school, they have to balance whatever extracurricular they have, which is in this case sport. And then they have to balance, you know, finding an internship or a job or whatever else they need for their futures. It's a lot of time management. It's a lot of coordinating around different class schedules, different obligations, making sure that they're doing all the things that they need to do. They're students, they're young people, so they're not always great at managing all these things, at tracking how well they're doing in class versus how well they're doing in game. So it's really important to have somebody there to, you know, help them follow up on all these things, to provide resources where they definitely need them and don't know how to find them, things like that.
Well, Hillary, we want to thank you for joining us today at Checkpoint XP on campus. UCI, again, is a program that a lot of people are looking to emulate across the country. Where can we find more information about UCI esports?
Obviously on our website, esports.uci.edu. But we also do a lot of consultation for schools and orgs looking to start something similar. So we will handle those on a case-by-case basis. We have a Google Drive folder, Tools for Schools, and that's a really great resource we share for schools. It has like our year one business plan, some job descriptions, really cool resources for anyone hoping to learn from our material. And obviously, I'm very open to being contacted. Anyone can email me at hyphan@uci.edu.
Hillary, thank you so much. We hope to hear from you again very soon.
That was Hillary Fan from UCI Esports, and we're going to have more coming to you, Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for the collegiate scene of esports. And now, we know that Smash Brothers is a huge deal on college campuses across the country. Now, DLC is coming out at Fever Pitch. The latest character announced has been Terry Bogart from SNK. Jacob is a little baby and he doesn't understand how important this is. So we're going to talk about it. Terry Bogart, the new character for Smash Brothers. How do you guys feel about that?
Why don't you go first, Jacob?
Yes.
You want me to go first?
You've been giving me stuff all week, and I've just been taking it in. So please, let's start it off.
Well, you guys are both fighting boys. So, like, you know, you both care about a 1991 property. That's pretty rad. But you know what else came out in 1991? Sonic the Hedgehog. So I think that proves that some things can stay relevant over time, and other things can't. Because, you know, he's in King of Fighters. I'm sure it was popular. Mm-hmm. It was so good at Evo this year, especially when it didn't show up. Mm-hmm. And because I was trying to connect the dots of why they'd bring back this guy. Mm-hmm. So first off, I recommend a name change because he's just Ken wearing Ash Ketchum's clothes. So I consider him Ken Ketchum. So Ken Ketchum, you know, why is he there, right? And so I did some digging. Mm-hmm. And besides being, do you even own a Neo Geo game on the Switch?
I don't.
No one else does, okay? So first off, bringing back a Neo Geo character when no one owns any Neo Geo game of like the 1,400 that are on there, Also, King of Fighters 14 is not yet on the Switch, and the port is in the process.
Right.
So what a better way to advertise to kids that don't know about a franchise that's no longer popular by bringing in a character of that franchise.
Yeah, that's cool, but I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah, come on.
Now, here's the thing. Number one, you lack context. Because King of Fighters not only is an old brand, a legacy brand, but it's one of the most important brands of fighting games ever created. First of all, the team system and tag systems were created by SNK and King of Fighters, and this is something that fighting games have had as a part of their apparatus since. And not only that, Terry Bogard is one of the most iconic characters from one of the most iconic brands in one of the most iconic genres of all of esports. So including him is also incredibly important. And on top of that, Smash has worked incredibly hard to be officially recognized as the FGC. Mm. It's taken almost 15, 20 years for them to be able to do that. And what better way for them to synchronize that feeling than to bring in a legacy, well-known, bespoke fighting game character into Smash like Terry Bogard? It's more than just being able to play an old character and promote an old game. It's about Nintendo and Sakurai acknowledging that Smash fans want to be FGC.
And let me tell you another thing. You've been giving me stuff all week, and I've been taking it in. You talked about a waste of a slot.
Oh, that's because it is.
No. You know why it's not? There's, in Smash, we have about 80-plus characters. There is no such thing as a waste of slot, because we got characters like... Your boy Sonic got in a long time ago, so I don't know why you're so salty about that, because he's been already in. Why are you bringing up Sonic? He's in. Let it go. But we're getting stuff like... the hero from Dragon Quest. So, and just
that's also a snore.
For you. But you have to remember, Smash is a global game. It's not just a U.S. title. We got players in Japan. We got players in Mexico. And guess what? The entire Latin American community blew up when Terry Bogard was announced, because SNK is big in that region.
It's
you
true.
Cannot deny that.
It's
just
true.
Because you don't like it, just because you don't care, does not mean no one else does. You're just looking at for anything that's your own opinion. You're looking for that stuff that supports you. And I get it. There are people who don't know what Terry is. But you know what?
This
is
almost all of them. Yeah.
Not all of them.
Almost.
My issue
90%.
With you, man.
90%.
Not 90%. There's reaction videos all over social media about people turned up about this. So you can't say that nobody cares. As a matter of fact, I myself personally, in our studios, lost my mind and almost fell out of my chair at this announcement, because it's that cool. And on top of that, Terry's moveset that he already has is tailor-made for Smash. I already know what his up smash is, down smash. I already know what everything's going to be. So he's going to be able to fit perfectly inside of Smash. And on top of that, you can't deny, as Daniel said, in a game with 80 characters, that any character that they add is pointless.
Well,
you
can put pretty much half of them are pointless.
At this point,
he will not give this up. No, he will not give this up.
No, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw, I don't know, Fast and Furious characters.
Honestly,
in
you
Smash.
May as well. This
you
point.
Might as well. But anyway, that's going to be it from Checkpoint XP on
more.
Campus. Yes, we're leaving it there.
At least no sword fighter.
That's like, whatever.
At least not a sword fighter.
But that's going to be it from Checkpoint XP on Campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. I want to thank everybody here in the UNLV studios. We want to thank Daniel Egbuya, Jacob Brothers, my co-host here on the set. We want to thank Leslie Fitzsimmons. We want to thank Ethan Schneider. We want to thank Kevin Kelly. We want to thank Jennifer Ream, Ben Morse, all the folks here in Vegas that have been helping out. We also want to thank our producers back in Detroit who have been helping us out with the visuals. That would be Joe Sloan. That'd be Chad Callahan. A lot of people coming together to make this show happen. So join us next week. Checkpoint XP on Campus.
Team Terry all the way.
Love you.